Greetings, podcast listeners. This is Dan with Spark R&D, and welcome to episode 7 of the Spark R&D podcast. After ISPO, which is the large winter sports trade show held in Munich, Germany every winter, I spent some time cruising around Europe. I went down to a splitboard event in Austria called Climb the Mountain, which was awesome. After that, I visited one of our ambassadors, Mr. Ettore Personitas, in the Gran San Bernardo Valley in Italy. We got to tour around for a couple of days, which was also a lot of fun. And the last stop on my trip took me to Chamonix, France, where I met up with Tom Wilson North, who is the shop manager at one of our longtime retailers, Zero G. Tom was nice enough to show me around the shop, take me out riding, and even put a roof over my head for a couple of nights. Many thanks to Tom for all of that. While I was staying with Tom, we had a chance to chat and record this podcast. Among other things, we spoke about his background, how he ended up in Chamonix, the backcountry and freeride scene in Cham, how he became familiar with Spark a number of years ago. We even hit on some of his thoughts on the ISPO trade show. You know, Tom's a really interesting guy. I definitely enjoyed our conversation, and I think that all the podcast listeners will as well. So with that, I'm happy to bring you episode 7 of the Spark R&D podcast. All right, sitting here with Tom, shop manager of Zero G.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say that.
You can say that. We're here in his kitchen in Chamonix, France. It's been great. Tom actually was nice enough to take me out onto the Aiguille du Midi today.
That's the best pronunciation I've ever heard from an American, Dan, honestly.
Thank you very much. I've been practicing all day.
Aiguille du Midi.
That sounds a little bit better when you do it. It's an amazing area. You live just in an incredible part of the world. The mountains here just rise out of the Chamonix Valley, and they are just absolutely stunning. It's been kind of breathtaking since I rolled into town a couple days ago.
Yeah, man, it's been dope. Like, it was a wicked day today. We got shut down with bad weather for the last couple of days type thing, so it was cool waking up to that, like, blue sky today and knowing we could go and do whatever. And
yeah, I had the boot crampons on today. You and I were roped up together. It's slightly more extreme snowboarding than I'm used to, but it was awesome. It got the kept my focus in. Like, people were like, "Were you scared?" And I'm like, "No, I was just kind of focused today." Yeah. And then we were out on the glacier, and you know, the pictures of this area don't do it justice. You get out here, and it's just It's like, bigger than you can imagine, and just steals your breath a little.
Do you remember, like, when we got down at the end, you were like, man, you just can't capture the grandeur of this place in photos. And it's true, like, you see pictures of Cham, but like, it knocks everybody's socks off when they actually get here, when they get into town, and they're like, what?
Yeah, this place is, it's something else, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's cool, man. So it's wicked living here. It's cool. I'm really lucky that I've been able to make my life here, you know, like.
And that's, you know, that's a great segue. You do make your life here in the mountains. That's not always easy for a lot of us, whether it's Bozeman or Chamonix, anywhere in the mountains. Like, you have to want to be living in the mountains, and you have to find a way to make it work. How did you make it work? How did you actually, make it to Chamonix? What's the story?
I guess needs must, really. Like, I never set up and said, right, I want to build a life in Chamonix. How do I do that? From in the UK where I grew up, which you could probably hear in my accent, right? I lived in the UK for years, and kind of like everybody, worked a bunch of dodgy jobs in their 20s, flitting from one thing to another. And I met this dude who was like, "Oh yeah, we need some people to come and help look after groups of school kids in the United States." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not really qualified for that, but I'll help, you know." So before I knew it, I was on a plane to Salt Lake City. And my job was basically meeting these school groups of like 50 English kids with their teachers off the plane. And then I'd take them up to the resort and look after them in the resort and stuff. And that's really my first taste of the mountains back in Utah. Like, this is 2003. So like, wow, 15 years ago. I'm old. But like, that was the first taste of the mountains. And then I got back to the UK after that. And then it was kind of not really doing it for me. I knew that I had this link with being in the mountains, you know, this magnetism everyone talks about wanting to come back to high places. So I did what I could to get out the next winter and lived in Utah for a couple of years, lived out east a little. And then I met this English chick, and she's like, we started going out and dating, I think you guys say.
Yeah, we say dating.
Dating, yeah. Seeing each other.
Your preference, both work.
Right, this is very pre-Tinder, so it's not a swiping thing.
No left or right?
No. But we started seeing each other, and she's like, oh, I got a job in Chamonix. Do you want to come? And I'm like, yeah, man, I love Switzerland. Let's do it. So she got a job here. I followed her to be with her here, and I needed a job when I moved to Sham, and I was like, well, I kind of know a little about snowboarding. I've been snowboarding for a good few years, and always been into snowboarding, so I need a job, preferably a snowboard shop. So I walked through town, and the first snowboard shop I came to was Zero G, and I went in and I was like, hey, dude, you have a job for me?
And I'm assuming, was this Martin that you ran into?
Martin Green, yeah, the owner. He's owned the shop since 1987, right? So he's been around the block a lot, yeah. Like, he knows what's what.
And I'm going to go back just for a second because we were laughing at a joke. Chamonix is not in Switzerland for anyone, if we didn't make that clear before. If everyone's right. Listening and being like, that's not funny.
No, it's clearly in Austria.
Yeah, Austria, right.
France, right?
Right, so you met Martin.
Yeah, I went in and I saw Martin. I was like, can I have a job, please? And I gave him my CV, and my CV was funny. It's like, thorough working knowledge of snowboarding, such as Option and Burton and like Ride. And like, it didn't say like I can do a 180, but it almost did.
Could you do a 180?
Yeah, I'd slide it out, but it's kind of sketchy. Yeah. At the time. Yeah, so that was 10-11 years ago now, after a bit of toing and froing, and I've been working at Zero G since then, and I went from like shop kid to renter of snowboards to head buyer, and I run the winter like rayon, which is like the section of the shop, which is what I do now.
That's awesome. How have you seen kind of like the free ride and backcountry scene evolve since you started here 10 years ago? Obviously, from our standpoint as a company, like, you know, we only started 11 years ago. The free ride scene, the backcountry splitboard scene has been changing a lot since then. Yeah. You know, in your opinion, you know, like, what have you seen change here in Chamonix?
Well, when I came here, it was kind of the good old days of like, to sell a snowboard as a retailer, you just need to buy a snowboard and lean it against the wall, wait a bit, and some dude comes and says, yeah, I'll take that one, man. It looks pretty cool. It's pretty different nowadays.
Yeah.
But like,
is it a more educated consumer now?
Yeah, totally. Like, back in the day, like, the internet didn't really exist, you know, like, or it did, but in a super minimal kind of way. Like, do you remember I was talking to you earlier about the dude, Brian, that I met? Like, I knew him through being on the Teton Gravity forums ages ago, and like, we're the only two people who lived in Chamonix.
It does give you some legitimacy, you know, like being on the TGR forums back in the day,
dude.
Like,
I still have my account. Sometimes I post on it, like, and I get off because it says like, oh yeah, member since 2004. Admittedly, I only have 50 posts, but no, like, yeah, so I used to link up with me and Brian used to link up and ski together, like, via TGR. But nowadays, the internet has changed everything, as everyone knows. This is not new, but the consumer is definitely way more educated. Like, he's read the forums, read the blogs, he's read some reviews, he's kind of done a bit of like kind of around the purchase before he comes to buy it. Definitely. So how does that fit into like how the free ride and backcountry scene has evolved here? It definitely has. Like, back in the day, it was free ride and backcountry was a segment type thing, you know, like, it's part of what we did.
Sure.
Like, okay, here are our twin tips, and here are kind of all mountain freestyle boards, and here are like soft bindings, and here are like jib bindings, and here are like, and then like, oh, you want to do free ride? Yeah, we have some of those boards like out the back. And now, like, you walk around Zero G, and it's just that, right? It's just directional boards with like some element of camber in, and the shop is quite selfishly about what me and the sales guys are about, which is backcountry snowboarding.
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty cool, because talking to a lot of the guys that you're working with who are awesome, really great to meet them over the last couple of days.
Yeah, you got them on a good day.
Yeah. Nice. But they're super knowledgeable because they're snowboarders, like most shop kids. But they're also, you know, you almost have to be a free rider here. And most of them are also splitboarders, so they're just super knowledgeable about the backcountry and where the equipment that they're using, because they use it.
Yeah. I think that's important. You know, like if you went into a garage to buy your new car, and your Citroën or your Peugeot or whatever you buy here in France.
Peugeot. Is that Peugeot? Another one of the ones I was mispronouncing before?
Right, we don't have Pontiac here. When you go into the garage to buy your car, like if the guy who's trying to sell you the car drops that he doesn't have a driving license or it doesn't drive, you're kind of like on the back foot, like, what? But we don't really have this with snowboarding. Like, we're happy to buy a snowboard off someone who's totally unqualified for that part of the sales process. The prerequisite to working in zero G is you got to shred. Like, we don't care if you're like falling leaf on the bunny hill or if you're like riding the agree every day. Like, you've got to ride snowboards in order to sell the stuff that we sell. But people appreciate that, you know? Like, people appreciate the honesty that we can give them after riding the gear ourselves. Like, someone's like, oh, should I buy this board or that board? And we're like, or this binding or that binding, that boot, this boot. And we're like, well, actually, I was riding that boot 20 minutes ago on that binding and it rocks, or a little stiff or a little soft, or that kind of didn't work, or this did work, or yeah. I think that authenticity really comes across in a shop like us.
Yeah, I agree, and that's what I was kind of getting from the dudes I was talking to yesterday. Right. And not the dudes, the dudettes too.
Yeah, we have dudettes there. Man, totally. Yeah. They shred.
They're ripped, man.
They were red. Yeah, totally.
You know, getting back to the splitboard side of things and just kind of the mix of the retail world, you know, you're talking about how you've seen the evolution of just on the retail side change here in Chamonix. You know, you have a pretty long history with Spark, just being in the retail world and seeing trends come and go.
Yeah.
You know, how did your relationship with Spark R&D start? Like, when did you get familiar with them and how did that all go?
So, like, this is, God, this is like 2010, I guess, 11? Just when the Blaze came out. What year was that?
Yeah, it was like, I think 2010 was the first model. Yeah.
2010.
O-10, yeah.
O-10. So, yeah, it was back in 2010, and we knew splitboarding was happening. It was just when the Jones thing was happening as well. Like, that was starting to gain traction, take off, and Jeremy had left Rosy. And there was like a page for what was going to become the Jones Snowboards page, and that was going to be that. So Jeremy's started doing that thing. At the same time, we always sold splitboard bindings. Not really splitboard bindings. We always sold the kits that let you put a regular snowboard binding on a split board, and we sold them. Yeah, that's right. We didn't really kind of know too much about them back then. There was kind of a dude who like knew a bit about them, and we sort of knew kind of what we were selling, but then people would be like, oh, I need a spare pin, or I need a spare T-nut, or I need this bolt, and we'd be like, whoa, like, what do we do? Like, now it's all changed. Like, now we have giant piles of parts for everything. But like, back in the day, it was very much like a small part of what we did. And then this guy, Laurent, who's a friend of ours at the shop, and he's like, yeah, man, I've heard about this thing. It's called Spark, right? It's a splitboard binding. And the owner, Martin, I remember, he's like, yeah, okay, this is cool. Like, we trust you, Laurent, you've got a good eye. Like, we'll order 10. Okay, 10 bindings, cool. So we got in touch with the dude who was Will and Becca. Like, they were basically running it out of their place.
I think we had a shop by then, but it wasn't the current facility.
Right, it wasn't the epic Spark moon base in its current iteration.
Yes, it is. Right. It's very much like a moon base now.
Right. So we called them and we're like, hi, we're a retailer in France. We've heard about this binding. We've heard it's cool. We want 10 of them. So like back then it was kind of like Facebook was working, but not like big time working. It was hard to get buzz out, especially about a new like kind of niche-ish product. And I had I talked to people about it, and people, there was like some friends of Laurence were like, oh yeah, we hear you're getting the Spark bindings. Is this true? Like, can we have this medium? And then a guy would call the next day and be like, oh, I want the large. And like, I remember I had a spreadsheet with 10 lines in it. And very quickly the 10 lines filled up with people who wanted to buy Blaze bindings. And then it became apparent we needed more. Yeah.
So were these locals? Like, just locals that heard it was coming in, or was it tourists? Because it's kind of like a mix here in Germany. You know, there's a ton of outsiders here all the time.
Yeah, this was pre-season, man. This is like this is September, October time mm-hmm. thing. So it's real, like, plugged-in splitboard diehard nerds who we love and respect and make up such a huge part of our market. So these guys would call us, and straight away we sold the 10 bindings within a radius of a few hundred kilometers. And I had this wait list thing, and then I go to Martin, and I'm like, I think we're going to need more. And he's like, yeah, how many? I'm like, 5.
Whoa.
I think I was on a Friday, and by Monday I'd sold like an extra 10, and I'm like, man, this thing's happening. This is going places. So then it that turned into the, I think we sold 60 pairs of bindings eventually that year, and it just kind of went, got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we turned into the big Spark shop we are now.
Yeah,
and we do sell other stuff. We don't just sell Spark bindings.
No, of course. You've been splitting for a while when this all started to get bigger. Mm. Do you have any interesting split board stories, whether it's, you know, just something that was an epic day or an epic zone, or just something that really sticks out in your mind when you think of split boarding, especially coming from, you know, pretty early on in Spark, and when, you know, you got to watch from a retail side the sport, or just our, you know, I hate calling it just a sport, but just our area of the industry,
right,
really start to grow, especially when, you know, some of snowboarding after a certain point started to at least lose some of its momentum.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, it would have been nice to have had split boards when we snowboarded Mont Blanc in 2009, I think, 10. Like, we did it on snowshoes and crampons and stuff, and it took us forever. It took a lot more work. Dude, it took us forever, and we were beat. When we got to the summit, we were just like, me and my friend Charlie, we were just like, we collapsed like in a heap, holding each other, both of us crying our eyes out, like, just exhausted, just wanted to get home.
And remembering that you have to still get down too.
Right, right. It's like, damn, where's the lift? But that would have been cool to have splitboards then. Splitboarding in Chamonix is cool. Like, the really nice thing is it goes really late here. Like, because it's so high, like, we go up to 3,800, the highest lift, and then you can go higher than that if you want, up to 4.8.
Meters for everyone.
Meters, yeah, sorry. Yeah, whatever that is in American.
Just do the math. You
know, yeah.
Times it by about 3 and you're good.
Right, we'll Google it afterwards.
Sure.
it goes high here, so there's always, like, an aspect that has snow into, like, easy into late May and June, and even after then, you know, like, you can split really late. We often go to the Col de Grand Saint Bernard, which is about an hour's drive from here. Super nice zone, like, it straddles the Swiss-Italian border. It's a bit away from Chamonix, so it's a bit away from the kind of crazy crowds, but it's super ancient. It's where Napoleon came through, like, with his armies. It's where Hannibal came through with his elephants. It's got a ton of history, and you're on one of those classic mid-European passes. There's even a monastery at the top of the thing, yeah. which is stuffed by these monks, right? And you can go and stay there. Like, you can stay overnight in this ancient building, so you split up to it, stay overnight in there. And these guys have been charged with looking after the pass, so the monks take care of people, travelers, as they're crossing the pass. And if you're in a whiteout, or if you're in a storm, if you can't find the monastery, like, the monks will come and find you and, like, come take you back up to the monastery. We didn't need that when we went last time, but we did go there, and we had a super nice night in the monastery overnight. Like, this place, which is, like, thousands of years old. It's like a monastery on top of temple, on top of church, on top of... It's insane. And then you get sick lines, like, on every aspect the next day. It's really nice. That's cool.
That sounds awesome. Let's go there next year.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Right, man. After totally. ISPO.
Well, you weren't splitboarding today, were you, though? You're riding your solid.
I was riding a solid lazy. Today.
You have ridden for 5 days splitboarding.
Before this in a row, after taking a much-needed down day yesterday to do a little work and let my body recover.
You got it.
It's been awesome. Austria to Italy, over to Sham, or down to Annecy. It's been a lot of fun splitting around Europe. I was happy to check out the Medi today, too, though. It was sweet.
Yeah, the Agri is cool, man. It's good out there. Like, it's a zoo. Me and my friend Pedro rode it on Thursday, and we're literally the only two snowboarders in the cable car. The only two snowboarders on the Vallée Blanche, and it was just us and the mountain, nothing else. And then today, like, I rock up with you, and there's probably, like, 500 people in the cable car station. We're, like, wedged into the cable car, like, sardines. You can hardly see out because it's so steamy.
And it's a little different than Bridger Bowl for us, too. I mean, there's some diehard skiers and snowboarders in Bozeman, Montana. I mean, it's a great community there, but it's different than the people that have the harnesses on and they're just looking real grizzled up, you know, in the lift line or the cable car line today with their harnesses and, like, 50 carabiners everywhere, and they're sharpening their crampons with a file. Well, that part didn't happen, but you can imagine.
But dude, like, while we were in the lift line, like, we're in the line for tickets earlier, and you're like, this is unusual, like, everyone's wearing a climbing harness.
Yeah. It's just a different way to approach the mountains.
What have you got me into, Tom? But it was fine. It was
like
cool.
I said, not scared. Focused today.
Focused. High heart rate.
Yep. You know, I wanted to transition really quickly to something that you posted the other day. You said it was a brain dump. But, you know, you and I were speaking just a couple weeks ago at ISPO.
Yeah.
You know, from a Spark standpoint, we travel across to ISPO every year.
Yeah.
It's always a lot of fun. We get to see a lot of industry people. Obviously, we're showing off our new line to all the dealers and everything that we'll be bringing out. But, you know, getting back to what you wrote, you were really stoked on it this year as compared to, like, a couple years past where it just seemed like some of the energy was dying. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. ISPO is a cool show. Like, I don't work for them. I'm not paid for them. I'm just a supporter of them. I think what they do is great. Like, I love being able to walk around a trade show, the thing that's in Munich every year, like late January, and just see every single one of my brands, like all of the new stuff. Yeah, I'm a total gear nerd, so like just walking around, like seeing the new product, like, oh, okay, these dudes have done this and sick, finally someone listened to me and they made this, or okay, that's a super interesting approach. Being able to walk around and like and see the new stuff is super cool. It's cool also not just for the, like, when I'm there, I walk around the aisles, like up and down looking at the new stuff, and I kind of flip between booths for different meetings for work. But what's really interesting at ISPO is not the meetings that are in your diary. It's more the stuff that you don't expect to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I met up with this dude, Fabrice, last year, who used to sell me Northwave. And we were walking around the aisles a little. And he's like, oh, yeah, Tom, meet this guy. This is John. And I'm like, oh, hi, dude. How's up? My name's Tom. Yeah, 0G, blah, blah, blah. Chamonix.
Mm-hmm. You gotta name drop it.
Right. But then everyone's like, wow, yeah, I love Chamonix. Yeah. And you just talk about that for 10 minutes. It's really easy to make a conversation. And he's like, oh, yeah, I run the SWS factory. And I'm like, oh, dude, cool. So then we tangented into talking about boards and production and warranties and like the quality and stuff. And it was a super dope conversation and a business card that I would never have expected to have had in my wallet when I left the place, you know. Like, it's kind of those unexpected connections that make ISPO a really cool place to go to. I think it's dope, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree. And just being a people person too, like, you know, I nerd out on the gear as hard as anyone.
Right.
And I enjoy walking, you know, from our booth to other booths just to see what everyone else is doing. And there's just a lot of stoke, you know, people are snowboarders especially, but just seeing skiers, whatever, what people are doing is interesting and it's fun, and it's fun to be around people that are excited about it. But the people you meet, there's a lot of different times when I'm at ISPO that I'll be chatting with someone who I don't have a face to, and then all of a sudden I'll get their name later and I'll be like, oh my god, that was
you.
Oh, that was like Mikey LeBlanc, or that was, you know, like, that was someone else. I'm like, I can't believe I didn't know that. Not that I would have acted differently, I probably would have acted way less cool.
Right.
It's actually important that I didn't recognize them right away.
Yeah,
having seen them usually in like snowboard parts, but it could also be like a marketing director of some other big brand that I've been BSing with for 20 minutes about splitboarding, because he splitboards, you know.
Sure.
And they don't come in and introduce themselves or tell them, you know, who they're with. They're just like, what's up? What's new with Spark? Love your product. Cool. Like, tell me what's going on.
Can I have some free stuff?
I get a couple of those requests too.
Yeah, it's cool. It's rad for that stuff. Like, just meeting people is so dope. I remember the first time someone introduced me to Jamie Lynn, was at ISPO? And I was just like jelly, man. Like, shaky hands, like, hello, I love your work. And he's like super chill, like, yeah, man, rad, I'm stoked, cool. And I'm just trying my best not to look too much of a douche.
Yeah. Then you walk away wondering, like, was that cool? Did I pull that off?
Why did I say that?
Why did I say that? I shouldn't have said that.
But no, he was cool. We were down. It's all right. It was a laugh.
Cool. I guess, you know, just to wrap it up, and I don't have this one on our agenda, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. God. But, you know, when you think of, you know, free riding and splitboarding, whether it's like the broader picture or just on the retail side, do you have any thoughts of just where you see that going, you know, in the future?
Man, if you have to know, you have to look at where you've been to know where you're going, right? So if you cast your mind back 10 years and then tell me that I'm selling a ton of spark bindings that go click-clack and slide onto pucks and like everyone is stoked and everyone wants them, I'd have laughed at you 10
years ago. Click-clack.
Right. Yeah, that might be your new product. Click-clack.
I'm going to write that down.
So who only knows, you know? Like, without fail, every year, like, something rad is happening in the freeride snowboard scene. Like, the thing that's getting the most traction for us at the moment that kind of reminds me of splitboarding in its nascent years is the grassroots thing, like PowerSurfs, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And not just Jeremy's thing on PowerSurfs, but there's a local guy, Ben, a German dude who runs a brand called Convoy, who's like...
Ben Dieterman, yeah.
Dude, they're sick. Have you seen those things?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're ill. Like, so many rad shapes and stuff, and like, we ride the Grassroots here because they're super cool, like nice bases and good shapes and stuff. And then I ride them like when I take my dog Twix for a walk up in the woods behind my house.
Yeah, yeah, right there.
And it's cool because there's power and it's shaded and it's rad. I can just power surf home from my dog walk. She loves it. But then like when I went to this event in Austria a couple months ago, Ben, the dude from Convoy, is like, yeah, man, you power surf? And I'm like, do I power surf? Of course I power surf. And he's like, well, let's go. And he takes me up the lift, right? And then we stood at the top of this head wall, this super steep thing, like 3-4 meters drop, and then into a face. Like, you, it's the sort of thing you wouldn't really think twice about snowboarding, but you're on a power surf, right?
Mm.
And it's like, okay, like zoning out. And then he drops in, he puts together these sick turns, he's a great rider, so like he's on this like super asim ill carving pal surf thing.
Yep.
So he's off and I'm just there with this dude Max, my buddy, and we're like, oh my god, it was scary as hell. So we drop in, we go super fast, we stack super fast, stack super fast, stack, and then kind of start to get the hang of it before we get back to the lift. But that was kind of the most fun I've had on a snowboard in so long, you know? Like, power surfing is dope. It's where it's at. It's kind of cool. And he's got split power surfers as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I had a chance to hang out with Ben a little bit at Climb the Mountain in Austria right after ISPO.
Right.
Super rad dude. And he's got some cool stuff going on. And yeah, super solid rider. We actually went out for a tour on the last day.
Yeah, so who knows? Like, I think power surf is a big thing that people are going to start getting into more and more. And we're going to see more companies developing the products. Who knows if they're going to start putting edges in them or not, like at the front contact point especially, but like maybe that'll be a cool thing to do in the backcountry.
I suspect it'll keep going this route too, but along with the POW surfers, like the POW splits, you know, not to get into like too many brand specific things, but you're definitely seeing a lot of people doing you know, kind of one type of snow specific boards, or you know, they might have a little more versatility than that, but they are meant to go ride knee-deep powder in.
Yeah,
and that was something we didn't have, you know, more than a couple of years ago. They were a lot more practical seemingly, like the shapes anyway.
Yeah, totally. Like we got a Grassroots at work, which is a test board, and you can ride a T-bar kind of more or less. It's not pretty, but you can get up. So who knows, like, where we're going to be in next 10 years of snowboarding. Like, one thing's for sure, like the snowboarders that I meet every day in the shop are so deeply passionate about what they do. Like, the guys who are coming in, buying stuff, testing stuff, interested, like spreading stoke with my staff and stuff. Like, they are so into what they do that no one is going to stop snowboarding anytime soon. Okay, it's not the biggest industry in terms of growth at the moment, but that makes it more pure, small, and beautiful. And it's just going to get better and better from now on.
Snowboarding's fun.
Yeah, man, that's good.
I like snowboarding.
You should tell more people that.
I've been trying. I've been trying to tell them about splitboarding too.
Right on.
It's good stuff. Cool. Well, Tom, thanks a lot for taking some time to chat with me.
Pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun.
Hang out, yeah.
Yeah. Being here in Chamonix, if you ever get a chance, highly recommend coming in here. Stop into Zero G if you're in the area too. Tom will stoke you out, show you what's new, show you what's good. And yeah. Thanks, Tom.
It's a pleasure, man. See you later.
Again, many thanks to Tom for the hospitality and, of course, for recording this podcast with me. As I mentioned, if you're ever in Chamonix, make sure you stop into Zero G and check it out. Maybe go find Tom, give him a high five. If you're listening to the podcast on iTunes, please take a moment to rate and review the show. It helps other folks find the show when we have positive reviews. So if you could do that, it would be much appreciated. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And this has been episode 7 of the Spark R&D podcast.